Getting more complicated every week. I have to wait until he gets something good in here. What's it? Well, this morning we are going to give some attention to industrialism in relationship to the 21st century. I think we all realize that conditions are getting continuously more difficult, and that we are faced with the immediate need for some careful planning. Without planning, we can be in serious trouble. Back in the 17th century, there was an old Jesuit priest who did a series of interesting illustrations of Noah's Ark. And Noah's Ark, in his eyes, largely resembled a Hilton Hotel. It had several different floors, each with proper rooms for all the various bipeds and quadrupeds. And on the top of it, in the most exalted spot, was a penthouse for Noah and his family. They really had it fixed very nice. So they started out on this great sea of the deluge in this wonderful boat. And we can't help but see a parallel to our planet. Our planet is like Noah's Ark, a vessel carrying life across a great ocean of space. This boat, in this case, is about 8,000 miles in diameter and supports hundreds of types of living things and thousands of minor varieties. This particular planet, surrounded by its magnetic fields and its various etheric zones, is isolated in a great ocean. There is no way in which the creatures upon this planet can really go anywhere else. And in spite of occasional rumors, there doesn't seem to be anybody, really, who wants to come here from anywhere else. We are more or less isolated. And we have a planet that has served us well, but at the same time we are imposing certain mistakes upon the processes of nature, and we're getting into some trouble. It's one thing to have a planet in which we could all live together in peace, and quite another thing to have a planet large enough for us all to live together in constant conflict and competition. We are gradually exhausting the resources of our planet without knowing anywhere else to get other resources. We are hopeful, perhaps, of someday using solar energy for this or that, but for the most part, we are locked in this globe, floating in a sea of life and air, moving serenely and majestically around the sun, and bringing with it around a world of people selfish, self-centered, egotistic, and indifferent to their own futures. It's time, I think, for us to turn from the heavy weight and thought of science to the common, everyday, common sense of trying to understand the problems we face and what it is possible for us to do about them. There's one thing that is obvious. In order to settle and solve our present dilemma and carry our future past the 21st century, we are going to be forced to discipline ourselves. We cannot live simply in a fun world. We cannot do anything and everything we please with no thought of consequences. We have only certain resources. Our planet is like a bottle. It has many interesting things in it and quite a supply of life energy. But the more rapidly we exhaust this energy, the emptier the bottle becomes. And it is already obvious that a number of empty spaces have appeared. Spaces that were once full of energy and possibility and now are exhausted and empty. So we must begin to think carefully about how we are going to live on this planet into the next century without an absolute impoverishment of our resources and an impoverishment of our own way of life. Well, we can take a couple of examples of this problem and see how it looks. We'll take, for instance, the problem of gasoline. We know that when we take a transfusion out of the human body, that we have to give that body a little rest in order to catch up and make some fresh blood. But when we take an infusion or take a transfusion from the planet Earth, we immediately come back for more of the same. We give it no rest, but we are dealing with a limited commodity, a commodity that must sometime be exhausted. The more carefully we use it, the longer it will last. But it is not repairable, and it cannot be restored, for it took millions of years to create and produce it. So here we are with a problem. Now we come along with an automobile. Now, an automobile was originally a comparatively simple means of getting from here to there. An automobile is now big business. It is one of the great industries of the world. And what happens? We are pouring gasoline into this car, and at the same time, the number of cars and the increase of buildings and cities and communities results in the fact that the power and speed with which we can get somewhere is rapidly diminishing. We must let the car run a little bit at least so that we can keep up with things while we can travel only 5 miles an hour. The cars are bumper to bumper, and I know of one case at least in which a family has to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and start out at 5 o'clock for about a 15-mile trip to work, where they're supposed to get about 8 o'clock. Now, this is not only an incredible situation, but a friend of mine who travels a great deal tells me that things here are comparatively simple. If I want to see real congestion, go to Mexico City. And if that doesn't quite please you, go to Iran and find out what is happening over there. And for that matter, try almost any European city. This traffic problem is becoming impossible. Yet we continue to produce about 10, 15 million cars a year. We continue to use gasoline without getting anywhere. And we have practically lost the use of ordinary locomotion. Even now, a mile or two is more than we can walk. All this adds up to the fact that we're getting into serious trouble. Now, one country has tried to avoid this trouble a very simple way. There are practically no cars in the Chinese Soviet Union. The people go on bicycles. They go everywhere on bicycles. The country is using its own human renewable energy to get from one place to another instead of exhausting the world's resources on fuel. This is something we must also give a little thought to. The problem of becoming aware of economy of natural resources. Another natural resource we're having trouble with at the present time is wood. We know that wood is a renewable agent, that it can be used and will grow again. But we're calling on it for more than it can possibly give us. On the one hand, we're chopping down the forests as fast as we can for various wood products, especially paper. At the same time that we're doing this, we have had an outbreak of serious fires destroying many square miles of forestry. Also at this time, we have a number of real estate agents dividing up the remaining land to selling off a building and cutting down the trees. All this is happening in one great big conglomerate. How are we going to control this? How are we to reduce the need for this particular type of material? Are we using what we have of it wisely? Are we setting an example that can go into the next century and assure us that we will have proper forests and proper land for recreational purposes, that we will not be worried about running out of the commodities that we need? Well, we have all kinds of uses of paper. We also have the recycling of paper. But in fact, of everything, we have a tremendous reduction of available timber. And one of the things that we are using it for very heavily is paper. Now, the average family, I think, here, at least most of you in the last month or two, have received a deluge of advertisements and catalogs and pamphlets and requests for one thing or another. These have gone through the post office and have blocked it so heavily and forced such an improvement of its facilities that we have to pay more than that now to send a letter than we used to do to send a heavy package. So we now are using this paper, wasting it largely, tons of it, hundreds of tons of it, for advertising purposes. In newspapers, we put a whole page ad, and all that's on it is the name of the store and a picture of a pair of shoes. It could be just as well put on a quarter page or an eighth of a page. But a full page is more attractive, and the result in paper no one cares anything about. There are many, many ways in which we could conserve our natural resources of wood, that we could save a great deal on the loss of our forestry by simply economizing on our use. Most of the material that is put on the paper is thrown in the wastebasket within a few hours. There is very little of permanent value. It is not a world history that our descendants will read. It is simply a passing announcement put up by an advertising agency and filling a large amount of paper that thereby is lost as far as its permanent value to humanity is concerned. We must begin to conserve resources to have something for the 21st century. We must also do this in order that we may set an example for the future of that which is necessary to our own security and the perpetuation of our species. Education should definitely include instruction in the conservation of resources. And it is not too early now, in fact it's pretty late, to introduce such educational procedures into our public school systems. We need people to realize the responsibility of use and misuse, that everything that we use is being taken from our natural resource, that this resource is isolated in space, that we cannot fill it at will. We can only use whatever survives, and every year less survives because of wastefulness. We are wasting too much natural resource, and it is going to come in the end to the fact that we are going to come to woeful want on these matters of which we are now ignoring. So we need to recognize all these basic factors. Now, the basic factor of food is also another problem. At the present time, we are not eating to live. We are more or less living to eat. The world is either overfed or on the verge of starvation. There is no consideration for the proper use of food products. There is no recognition of the importance of estimating what the human being needs, making certain that he gets it, without wasting thousands, millions of dollars worth of available food resources. We can take a very simple example of this. In the Scandinavian countries, a few years ago, they began an experiment in connection with grain. After all, grain is a basic food. So what do we do with it usually? We eat some of it, that's true, packaged and variously adulterated and variously inoculated with preservatives. But what do we do with most of it? We feed it to cattle. And by that means we fatten the cattle. Then we kill the cattle and eat the meat. The Scandinavians have suggested, with perhaps considerable intelligence, that we just skip part of this process and eat the cereal ourselves, and therefore not allow two-thirds of it go to fattening meat. We do not save one single thing in the form of energy, because the animal gets the energy from the food it eats. If we eat the food first, we do not need the energy of the animal, and we can reduce one of our greatest sources of poor health, and that is over meat eating, which is one of the curses of the American public. We can therefore no longer find it necessary to keep these great herds or to make all these adjustments and maintain a great system of slaughterhouses. We can simply eat the cereal ourselves. Now, this seems too simple. It must. It just can't be worked that way. We can't do it that way. We have to fatten the meat. We have to do all kinds of things. And we have to set aside a large group of people to do nothing but murder animals. All of this is utterly waste. And the same thing is occurring to a certain degree in the African areas that are set aside as animal reserves. As soon as the reserve is set up, the poachers come in and try to kill the animals anyway. It is time that things of this kind be given proper consideration. Because if we do not give it this consideration, we're going to be in very serious trouble. Not only are we reducing the supply, but we are increasing the population. We are now faced with a problem that before the end of the 21st century, the population may well be close to twice its present size. With this additional population, we will have less land for the growing of vegetables, things of this nature. We will also have impoverished soil, overworked. We will have every facility that we have overworked in the effort to take care of these people. And at the same time, the supply of material to take care of them with is steadily diminishing. Now, unless we depend more and more upon material that reestablishes itself, we are going to be in a very, very bad way. Now, what is behind all of this? Well, it's what it's always been, the problem of profit. We are thinking largely in terms of the profit on motor cars, not on the fact that they are gradually coming to a standstill because there's no way of moving them. We do not think particularly of the needs for certain paper or certain materials. We think only of the profit from it. We think only that all things on earth are available for sale, and it is up to us to merchandise them. So we are now problem with trying to merchandise the natural resources of the earth. We are trying to find ways to make profit on materials and substances and essences which are gradually diminishing, thereby becoming more scarce. The more scarce they are, the more expensive they will be. And we are gradually coming to a very serious dilemma. And unless we do something a little bit about it, we may even have trouble trying to tip ourselves into the 21st century in one piece. It is getting acute. It is getting to the point where some intelligence must take the place of the opinion that money is everything. It is not everything. There's a little story that kind of brightens this up of a group of people in Poland forming a line waiting to get into a meat market. The line has gotten longer and longer and longer. The store is still closed and the line is about 3 blocks long. At this point, the management of the store comes out and says, "Will the communist card-carrying citizens step out of line and come in?" Well, there's nearly a riot. All the rest are about ready to explode. They're pretty nearly ready to start a civil war. Seeing the situation, the management comes out again and says, "It is only fair that these card-carrying members should come in first. So that we can be the first to tell them and the first that will know that there isn't any meat for anybody." Well, we're coming a little close to this problem. It's not funny anymore. Our population is increasing. Malnutrition is increasing. And from the depletions of various problems and substances, crime is increasing. Degeneracy is increasing. And reliance upon narcotics is increasing. All the things we don't want, we're getting more of, because we're wasting the things we need, which are getting scarcer. There's only one way we can do this, and that is begin to grow up. Every individual who becomes an adult in the modern world, in any country, should be educated to the realization that we are castaways on a small ball in space. There is nowhere else to go. There is no other way in which we can outgrow this and move west as they did in 49, or move up to Alaska as they did in 98. We are here, wherever we go, the same scarcities will prevail. Therefore, we have got to be prepared to live within our means. We've got to be prepared to use the values of our planet constructively and usefully, and we've got to create a commonwealth of cooperation instead of a battlefield of competition. It has to come. If it does not come, the powers that are greater than we are will turn this planet into a desert. We are not going to be allowed to break every law of humanity and every law of common sense, lose all sense of virtues and proprieties, and do this forever. The laws of nature are exact. The laws of nature are fair and honorable. They reward that which is good and they punish that which is bad. We have been bad so long that the punishment is near, and the best thing we can do is repent in time to try to put together this situation and get it back on its feet again. Therefore, it means that we have to do what the old Socialist Party told us long ago. Think in terms of production for use instead of production for profit. There will be a reasonable profit if we're intelligent, but there will no longer be this mass urge to double and quadruple your holdings in the first year. We will not be thinking in terms of a handful of millionaires, but in a nation or a world fairly well populated with contented people doing reasonably well according to their talents and abilities. We've got to gradually get over the fact that a system such as we have is only useful if there's some place to go when you wreck what you have. If there was another empire somewhere in a corner of the earth where we could start over again, it would be already filled probably, but there would be room for some more. But there is no other place. It's got to be done here. It's got to be done within a comparatively small area with a constantly increasing population. The only way that we can get together is to do it in a sensible and honorable and constructive manner. Another great waste of potential materials, probably the greatest waste of all in nature, is war. War is completely impossible in this world such as we have without destroying that world. It is absolutely necessary for us to realize that we cannot take the decreasing natural resources and blow them up year after year, turning everything that we have into war materials, then not even going to war with it, but allowing it to rot. We cannot continue to waste our resources on our animosities. We cannot continue to hate people and hope for the best. It will not work. And there should be a sufficient amount of intelligent people graduating from our various universities and already graduated, leaders in various walks of life, who should have the common sense to know that it is absolutely necessary, once and for all, to terminate warfare as a manner or matter of how to solve problems of international relationships. It cannot go on, because we will in a few years, or can in a few years, blow up our entire load of natural resource. We can make this planet into a desert by using everything in it that is of value for warfare. And the warfare problem is not what really concerns most of them. The war problem is the profit on the munitions. Well, this profit is nothing but profit on the blood of each other. And it has got to be solved. But there is one of the great wastes of natural resources. The world is covered with the wrecks and ruins and skeletons of war materials. It is using most of the nuclear energy for purposes of defense. We're having trouble with these nuclear plants and will continue to have trouble because we are trying to use an artificial means of solving a natural problem. That is, as a family, we must fit our demands to the resources that are available. And with this kind of thought in mind, we have to go now to the second prong of this problem, and that is distribution and merchandising. We have to realize that we are making a life purpose out of buying and selling. We have come to the conclusion that there's nothing worth living for except what we buy and sell. This is a really basic mistake. It means that the average person, a human being today, is more concerned with what he has than what he is. He is not interested in the improvement of his character. He is interested in the improvement of his wardrobe. But actually, this wardrobe will do him very little good if he continues to overlook the growth of his own nature. Man is the most potential source of intelligent conduct. Man can, via the equipment which has been bestowed upon him, solve most of the problems that he faces. But he is not interested in solving problems. He seems to be interested in complicating them. If he has two suits, he wants a third. If he buys a necktie, he wants another one at three times the price. If he buys anything, he looks forward to its obsolescence. And in the tragedy of obsolescence, we have a new member of the group, a very important one, the computer. The computer bids now to take over most of the misfortunes and infirmities of the human race. Instead of being what it was hoped to be, a great step forward, it is going to be an intensive way of complicating our conditions. Unless somebody with intelligence takes over this thing and leads it in the way it should go, it will just end in a worse complex than the television, radio, motion picture, all of which were intended to help and have become simply instruments of commercialization and exploitation. So with these tender thoughts in our minds, we must try to figure a little something to do about it. I would suggest the first thing that we drop several different courses in the primary schools and put in a course that deals with the basic problem of citizenship. And citizenship not in the terms of politics, but citizenship in the terms of the fact that each child that comes into this world is a citizen of this world while he's here. That he has the opportunities the world can give him and the responsibilities necessary to protect that world. He should begin in his own education to conserve resources, to make do. Instead of throwing things away, correct them. Do everything possible to extend and perpetuate the resources that we possess. That it's not necessarily enough to plant a tree, which will be cut down next year anyway, but it is necessary in personal life to live moderately, live as frugally as possible, and not fall victim to this continuous programming of advertisements with which we are all afflicted. The time has come when the young people and the old have got to realize that they are responsible for the survival of their planet. It is no longer what nation is going to dominate. We are surrounded by an empty, mysterious thing called space. Space always has dominated and always will, probably. But we can keep our own existence longer, happier, and healthier if we keep the rules rather than trying to exploit every opportunity that comes along. Exploitation should be considered as a major crime. It is something that not only will injure the individual who is being exploited, but which will endanger the survival of the planet. We never think of planets as being in need of survival, but they are. And a planet is a very complicated thing. And what will happen if the balance of chemistry and minerals and so forth inside of a planet, if this balance is destroyed by exploitation, by removing and wasting energies which the planet has been storing for ages, what will this happen? What will happen from as a result of such a condition? What will this be in terms of the relationship between the sun and the earth? The sun has certain influence on the earth. The earth is dependent upon the sun. The magnetic fields of these various bodies are related to each other. And if we bankrupt the magnetic field of the planet earth, what do we have? We can have something that will slowly but inevitably die. Now, we like to think that inside of the human being there is a moral power. We like to think that man has a spirit or a soul. The ancients believed the planet had a spirit and a soul. It believed that if the planet was mistreated, it would fight back or it would get sick. Everything had a soul. And when that soul rules, there is normalcy. When that soul is disobeyed or destroyed, there is abnormalcy or subnormalcy. The planet, to be healthy, must be protected and maintained by the healthy cooperation of the creatures that live upon that planet. And as man is the leader of these creatures, he must set the example for the rest and help all the other forms of life to cooperate with nature in the fulfillment of its own purposes. Unless we do this, we have no heritage to hand on to anybody. We will have nothing but a moral bankruptcy, finally resulting in the physical decay of the planet. We cannot break the rules without the rules breaking us, and it is very high time to take this into very grave consideration. We must watch in merchandising not to repeat and go into competition on the same products. We must also be very careful to get over the idea of putting the life length of a product as short as possible in order that we may sell another one of the same. We have to recognize that it is our moral duty to see that the various products, coffee pots or percolators or whatever they are, last as long as possible. Because every time a replacement is necessary, a material that cannot be replaced has to be taken from nature's storehouse. And if we keep doing this one day of the days, we're going to find, like Mother Hubbard, that the cupboard is bare and there's nothing more that we can take out. So we should be very careful and thoughtful not to throw away that which is good and useful simply because of some passing mood of style. Not wasting our funds upon things which neither help, improve, nor really satisfy anything, but to keep in possible within the range of reasonable activity and reasonable replacement. If we do this, we will help to keep the planet as full of natural resources as possible. We can't prevent them all from being some loss, but we can help to make those losses minimal. Now, this presents us with another phase that we have to consider, it seems to me, and that is what to do with what we don't want. This becomes the problem of how to get rid of waste. The present situation is noticeable in practically every community in the United States and in most other countries. The stacks of rubbish reach almost to the moon, and there are some who would like to put it there, but it's not very practical at the moment because of the problems of transportation. But at the same time, we have to handle the problem of waste. We try to bury it. We take nuclear waste and put it in kegs and drop it in the ocean. We do everything we can, particularly with the nuclear waste of both industry and militarism. But here we come against something that is really serious, that most of the nuclear waste that we're trying to dispose of cannot be disposed of that way. We can't get rid of it. We can only consider the need to find a cure for it if this is possible. And instead of many of the research programs that are now going on, which bring very little to anybody, somebody should get seriously interested in what to do with the nuclear problem. And until we are able to find a proper answer, either discontinue the processes or else reduce them to an absolute minimum. There should be the first of all, that never again will nuclear materials be used in warfare, never allowed to be used in any form except where it can possibly perhaps produce light or help some way to advance civilization. And even then, with the greatest reserve and the first consideration being to use such powers as can be controlled or can be found and used or, if necessary, can be discontinued. Whereas the nuclear energy problem is as yet unsolvable, but we still go on making the problem. We still continue trying to do something with no good consideration for what happens afterwards. This slips into many forms of industry. We have industry everywhere, which is dumping dangerous waste into our water supplies, into our rivers and our lakes, destroying our fish and marine life, and polluting the oceans. Now, doesn't anybody realize that this is serious? Do we want to continue making legislations to permit this to continue against the better judgment of enraged citizens? What are we doing with pollution? Now, pollution is of two kinds. You know, every living thing must cause a certain amount of pollution. We know that. But there is a natural pollution problem and an artificial one. The natural pollution problem, the natural problem of handling the disposition of natural waste from the bodies of living things, all this has been taken into consideration by nature. And all natural wastes can be handled by nature without great danger to anyone. It is the unnatural wastes that are the things that nature cannot and does not handle. It also does not handle a useless or thoughtless wastefulness, which creates a pressure upon natural facilities. The natural wastes of living things since the dawn of time have not damaged the planet. In fact, they have produced a great deal of the wealth of the planet. But the nuclear waste that we are developing now can destroy everything in a comparatively short time. The time has come very definitely where this must be curbed, where it must be handled. And again, it is a matter of the individuals becoming more intelligent as they come to the end of this century. The citizen of tomorrow, the young people we hope will take over after the beginning of the next century, should be educated and trained to understand what is dangerous and what is not dangerous. They should be thoroughly prepared to dedicate their lives and their thoughts to the prevention of unnecessary waste, unnecessary evil, and of always of utterly and eternally unnecessary conflict and war. These young people must realize as they come in that competition is not the life of trade. It is the death of trade and the trader as well. Out of a world struggling in wars and rebellions and political uproars all the time, worse every day, we are developing an idea that sometime one of these nations or some of them will win and the others will give in and peace will set in. This is a false hope. This confusion will continue until individuals recognize that brotherhood and friendship will contribute to survival and hatred and war will contribute very rapidly to the complete disintegration of the planet. We have no longer the right to destroy the future as well as ourselves. We should pass on this world to this world of tomorrow, a world as good as we found it. And when the last century began in 1901, we had a planet that was comparatively livable. It had its problems, it had its mistakes, it had its false geniuses, but the individuals of that period had a reasonable chance of growing up, establishing homes, and doing a day's work. We are now passing on a generation, a century, of constant conflicts, of the worst wars in the history of mankind, of the greatest financial depressions recorded. We had to hand on the results of a dismal lack of common sense. We have completely forgotten the purpose of life. We are convinced in our own funny little way that we are simply here to enjoy ourselves, that we are not responsible to anybody for anything except to do as we please, and that it is the proper right of everybody to do what they please, even though it injures others, as long as it satisfies them. So this type of thinking has brought us to probably the worst crisis in the history of mankind. Now, nature is not very kindly to this type of attitude. The individuals who are wrong, if they're in the minority, they go through the little punishments that they have earned. But when whole nations, races, and vast areas become subjected to false thinking, then we have nature stepping in with very great and important changes. Changes that we will not like, changes that will make us very unhappy unless we prevent the need for them. We cannot go on as they are now going any more than we can continue indefinitely on cocaine or heroin. We may feel like $1 million now, but we will be very sick very soon. And that is the thing the world is catching up to and beginning to realize. There is an undercurrent now of people who begin to know that the way we have been doing it is wrong, and they are working to do it better if they can. So for those people, and for all of us, I think we should establish a definite system of learning based upon the place of man on a planet that he cannot get out of. He's here. He is not going to leave here. If somebody comes from another planet, he might look forward with a little hope, but his hopes will be dashed, because anybody smart enough to get here will probably be too smart to allow him to move in on them. So we are likely to be here, and we might even be under stress from the colonizing of planets that have been more sensible than we have. But in any event, we are here, and we are building a new generation, and we have already some 6 million people, 6 billion people to work with, and there will be probably 8 or 9 billion by the end of the next century. There will be as many more as is necessary to maintain the progress of humanity in terms of the propagation principle. But we are here to do something to make this place safe. The earth could handle or could take care of 25 million if these people lived together in peace and in amity. We could take care of many times as many as we have if there were people out to exploit everything and everyone. If we were willing to live moderately and would be willing to share our joys and sorrows with others, we could go on indefinitely. But as each individual remains a rugged individual, we were going to have very serious collective consequences. The individuals who will not work together will be the victims of their own lack of integrity. Now, we have been given religions and philosophies to help us to see these things. We have been taught the importance of brotherhood. We have been taught the reality of integrity. We have taught the wisdom of unselfishness. All these things we have taught, are taught, and in many religions they are still being taught. But the great motion of civilization goes on the same. Just to do as we please, make all we can, and then depart. And when we go, we need take nothing with us. But if we continue as we are, we'll leave nothing behind either. We are completely wrong in our entire assumptions of realities. Suppose we imagine that we came into this world, into a world of people who respected births, who respected children, who respected the family and kept the nobility and integrity of family. Suppose these children were brought up to respect their parents, to obey the laws of society, and to prepare themselves to make a useful contribution to the perpetuation of an honorable system. They could be taught the things that they need to know. A good system in school could help them. No one should be able to graduate from high school, certainly, without realizing the importance of cooperation above competition. We should know these things as parts of life, but they are carefully removed from the curriculum because they will interfere with the progress of our economic structure. We are concerned only with money, which we cannot take with us, and if they finally destroy the planet and it becomes a dead world, the money will be among the ashes of the dead.